Late last month, more than 5,000 people from across the country came together on the west lawn of the U.S. Capitol demanding Congress take immediate action to stop fracking. After the rally, participants marched for more than an hour, stopping at the headquarters of the America's Natural Gas Alliance and American Petroleum Institute. That rally comes to Albany later this morning with rally speakers including Bill McKibben, co-founder of 350.org, Josh Fox, producer of the film Gasland, and actress Deborah Winger, among others. The anti-fracking movement in New York State is unifying around a new pledge to resist fracking in New York, following some signs that Governor Cuomo is considering releasing final fracking regulations and lifting New York's moratorium. The event takes place at 11 o'clock at the Corning Preserve. We are pleased to have two of the organizers and featured speakers, Josh Fox and Bill McKibben, join us live this morning in the studio to share their thoughts on the issue and, of course, take your phone calls. Gentlemen, welcome. Thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure.
Good to be with you as always.
Nice to be here.
Josh, it's very nice to meet you in person. We've spoken on the phone, but it's very nice to have you here live. Bill's been a dear friend for a long time, as long as I've been in broadcasting, 20-plus years, and I thank you very much for being back. Bill and I used to just sit for hours at these endless solid waste committee meetings in Warren County, and there a friendship was born. Did you ever think you'd be here today talking about these issues now?
From Warren County to the world. There
yeah,
you go.
Absolutely. You know, that, which brings up a question before we get into fracking. When you started this, End of Nature, you started writing about these subjects. Did you ever think that it would lead you into activism?
No. I was a rioter. I wrote the first book about global warming for a general audience, you know, and I thought that was my part in this fight. And I kept waiting for the kind of movement to arise to deal with the biggest problem the planet's ever faced, and it never quite did. So that's why 4 years ago now we founded 350.org, which unfortunately is still the only group in the whole world that just takes fighting climate change as its sole priority.
Which seems unbelievable.
It does, especially since the things that I talked about a quarter century ago in The End of Nature, then abstractions, are now incredibly practical realities. Look at our continent right now. I mean, we've got epic drought. The Mississippi River is so low you can't take a barge down it. As of yesterday morning, we've set a new all-time low in the history of human beings for the amount of ice in the Arctic. Things are coming unraveled and unraveled fast. And the only good news is that there's a movement like this, of which this fracking movement is a part, to try and do something about it.
So let us talk for just a moment about how this is connected. When you look at the issue of fracking, and specifically staying on message as to what you are here in Albany to do of this pledge to resist fracking in New York, how does that fit into this global warming concern?
I had a piece this summer in Rolling Stone that went strangely viral because it was a sort of complicated piece. What it showed was...
It was amazing, by the way. And much better than the Justin Bieber article.
It actually got a lot more play than the Justin Bieber, for whatever reason.
Thank God.
But the basic point of the piece was the fossil fuel industry already has in its reserves 5 times more coal and gas and oil than even the most conservative governments and scientists say it's safe to burn. They already have 5 times what will take us past a 2-degree rise in temperature. Well, all we're doing in New York at the moment is trying to find some more of this stuff. It's crazy. Added on to the fact that we now understand that when you frack for gas, you release a lot of methane straight into the atmosphere along with carbon you get from burning the gas once you've taken it out of the ground. So, you know, this has been sold as some kind of alternative to coal or something. It's not. It's just one more fossil fuel play taking us that much further down the road toward a overheated planet.
Josh, what should our concerns be when it comes to this practice?
Well, there are so many concerns. Obviously, the film Gasland details all of the water contamination issues that happen when you're drilling through aquifers. I mean, there's a lot of talk about the Marcellus Shale being 8,000 feet below and it's not near the water table, but you don't sort of teleport gas from down there to the surface. You have to drill through the water table. And when you do that, you create a conduit between layers where there's a lot of nasty stuff. You're injecting huge amounts of chemicals and water into that formation. And we're learning that the casing, which is the cement that surrounds the well, breaks down and breaks down at a very, very high rate, 6% immediately upon drilling, and then rates as high as 50 or 60% over 30 years. So you're creating a toxic problem. Someone is holding up a card.
Oh, no, those are for
That is very close to the water table. So you have people who can light their water on fire. There's a lot of gas migration in private water wells. We have a lot of private water wells in New York and great water quality in New York. But what Bill is talking about are essentially boiled down to air quality issues. Where you have drilling, you have venting off of methane in a lot of different locations, in the pipelines, at the well pads themselves, in the separators, the compressor stations. So you're venting off toxic material into the air, and researchers in Colorado have pointed to that air pollution as a public health issue, as well as what Bill is mentioning. You're releasing raw methane into the atmosphere. The natural gas industry is very fond of saying that they burn cleaner than coal, yeah, and trying to kind of co-opt the environmental movement in adopting gas over coal. But when you actually look at the realities, as reported by scientists at Cornell, peer-reviewed studies that show when you're sending that much methane up into the air, you're no better than coal. You're actually balancing out the effects, and you have a fossil fuel which is contributing to climate change as badly as coal or worse in the short term.
The film Gasland is incredible, and is certainly one that is kind of a benchmark for many people of what is happening and what can happen. It's important, I think, for people who are not familiar with the film to know that it is, I mean, it's your story in the sense of you received the letter from a company saying, hey, we'll give you $100,000 to lease property in Pennsylvania that your family owned to drill for gas.
Yeah, where I still live, which is right on the border of New York and Pennsylvania. I live in the upper Delaware River Basin. I'm literally a mile from the Delaware, a mile from the New York border. My area, which is this one of the last pristine rivers on Earth, the Delaware River, is drinking water for 15 million people. And the gas industry came in and proposed to everyone in that whole area gas leases, both on the New York and Pennsylvania side. And so New York's vote on the Delaware River Basin Commission, one of those five votes, has been no, don't frack the Delaware. One of my chief worries, and many people who live in the river basin and who live downstream and use the water, is that if New York moves forward with fracking regulations, they'll change their vote on the Delaware River Basin Commission, and all of a sudden that whole area, the watershed for 16 million people, will be opened up to fracking. Now, I didn't know any of this stuff. 4 years ago, I'm sort of accidental in this. They came and literally knocked on my door, I decided to do research, and that led me 60 miles out to the center of 60 miles west to where they were drilling in Pennsylvania, and I found a complete disaster area. Halliburton trucks swarming all over the place. People who could light their water on fire, children getting sick, animals getting sick, and a sense that normal democratic process had been completely overturned, and this town, Dimmock, had been just basically handed over to become an industrial drilling zone. And I thought, this can't be the standard across America. So I went out and went to Colorado and went to Arkansas and Wyoming and Texas and Louisiana. Everywhere I went, it was exactly the same story. You had very powerful gas interests move in, convince people to lease or own the mineral rights ahead of time, and then basically take over. And amazing, beautiful places throughout the United States are getting completely trashed by this industry.
Let's talk about that power for a second. I'd like you both to weigh in on the power of this industry. What does it say that we are at a point where the governor of New York State is considering this? Where are we when we say that this is something that the President of the United States has not taken off the table and is pursuing? How much should we read into that?
Look, this is the richest industry in the world. They have more money. I mean, I'm no theologian. I'm just a Sunday school teacher. But these guys have more money than God, you know. And that ability to warp our democratic system is a big part of what's going on here. Look in Albany. Governor Cuomo keeps saying, we're going to stand by the science wherever the science goes. Well, the guy that they picked to lead their scientific investigation at DEC turns out to have, a decade ago, signed this petition saying that global warming was a hoax and that more global warming gases would be good for the atmosphere. They piped the whole thing. I mean, they took they corrupted the scientific investigation from the very beginning. And that, by the way, in a state that has such a proud tradition of environmental, I mean, the DEC, you know, I grew up with the conservationist, the DEC yeah. magazine on my, you know, night table. I've been the lean-to adopter with the DEC and Lizard Pond lean-to, which I highly recommend, you know, for 20 years. My best friends are DEC forest rangers who I've spent endless amounts of time out in the woods with. It is a shame. It is a real shame to see the DEC corrupting itself at the behest of big donors.
Yeah. Gosh. Well, I mean, I don't even know where to start. My new film, Gasland 2, is essentially about another layer of contamination in related to fracking, which is the contamination of our government. And it goes into goes further than that. If you want to just talk about sheer money, the Safe Drinking Water Act is the primary protection for Americans' drinking water. The gas and oil industry spent $747 million, $750 million, getting an exemption to the Safe Drinking Water Act at the federal level in 2005. They're exempt in many ways from the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, the Superfund Act, in a lot of ways, NEPA, the National Environmental Policy Act. The list goes on and on. And when you look at, I've been learning so much about this sort of tendrils of this industry and how they can influence media and government. When you're spending probably $5 million a week on ads nationally, hundreds of millions of dollars on PR promoting natural gas, it has an effect. I mean, you see editorials in newspapers which are blatantly untrue.
This is why we like public radio.
Yeah. but have an effect on who? Because when you look at the polls, polls say that the majority of people are wary of this. Mm-hmm. So is it an effect on the people who are putting the money in their pocket, the people who are, like yourself, getting letters saying, hey, we'll give you $100,000 to lease your land?
Well, there's an enormous – well, there's that, certainly. The money is a huge factor. When you've got predatory leasing, you've heard of predatory mortgages. You've got predatory leasing going on throughout Pennsylvania and New York where the gas industry are going into communities that are, you know, not doing so well economically and saying you can basically just save the farm by burning it. I mean, if you've leased it, you're not going to be able to live there after that point. But that's not what the gas industry will tell you. They'll say, oh, it's just a fire hydrant in the middle of your field. You won't hardly know we're here. And then, of course, once you've signed that paper, you've basically handed over your land. But beyond that, I think there's an enormous downward pressure on legislators and politicians. Liz Krueger, state senator, explained this to me. If they've spent $3 million in lobbying in Albany, it might be that all $3 million is levied towards the three candidates who are on the fence in the middle of this issue. It might not be $3 million spent on the entire legislature. Mm. It might be, you know, the threat of a smear campaign, the threat of funding your political opposition, which we've seen happening. That happened to Maurice Hinchey in his last election. $2 million spent against him and what was considered to be a safe Democratic blue district for Hinchey all of a sudden became the fight of his life. So there is a real threat there to politicians who would like to sort of stick their necks out and stand up for the people and say, you know, this is not the way the industry is saying it is.
And I think what's confusing for a lot of people is that it's not a party issue, right? I mean, it's not a red state, blue state, white hat, black hat.
No, this is one of these No, it's one of these green in the pocket issues, and yeah. That's the problem. But you pointed out the really good thing, which is that despite this endless blizzard of ads and whatever else, the majority of people in upstate New York want nothing to do with fracking. And I think it's because, this is just my guess, having lived here for a long time, that New Yorkers almost instinctively, though we don't talk about it as often as maybe we should, remember what a incredible watery treasure this state is. Just think about New York State. Forget for a moment the highways and the cities, and just think about the watersheds, you know, from Lake Erie and Lake Ontario, from Lake Tier of the Clouds down to the Verrazano Narrows, you know, across the Erie Canal. We set aside the Adirondacks 120 years ago in large part to protect water quality downstream in the rest of New York. People were willing to make that big a decision, our legislature, in order to protect
acres.
In order to protect water quality above all, you know. Now, I mean, just think how far we've come. You know, Broome County isn't doing well economically. So instead of trying to figure out something smart to do with it, Broome County's where IBM was born. I mean, that's what we used to do when we wanted to do economic development. Now the Cuomo administration can't come up with anything better than basically selling off the pollution rights to the southern tier. That's a disgrace. And I think people's intuitive understanding, maybe especially in a year of epic drought across America, that our water is worth protecting at almost all costs is a very reassuring sign about New Yorkers.
We are talking to Josh Fox and Bill McKibben this morning. They are participants in a Don't Frack New York rally that takes place at 11 o'clock at the Corning Preserve Riverside Park in Albany this morning. We welcome your phone calls, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-34-TALK-1, 1-800-348-2551. We'll continue our conversation and take your phone calls with Josh Fox and Bill McKibben after this short break. Welcome back to the Roundtable. We have Bill McKibben and Josh Fox in the studio with us. Bill McKibben is co-founder of 350.org, a best-selling author of many environmental books, including the latest, which is Earth, E-A-A. How many A's in it? Two?
Two A's.
E-A-A-R-T-H. And Josh Fox, producer of Gasland and the forthcoming Gasland 2. Both are taking place, both are taking part, in a rally, Don't Frack New York rally at Corning Preserve Riverside Park in Albany this morning at 11 o'clock. We welcome your phone calls to talk about this issue and to ask any questions and to air your thoughts and concerns. 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-34-TALK-1. Let us begin with Helen in, where you're in southern Vermont, Helen?
Helen, no, South Egremont, Massachusetts.
South Egremont, Massachusetts. There you go. Go
just
ahead.
Just across the border from New York State. I heard on the news on AMC that Mayor Bloomberg thinks that you can do responsible fracking with a list of rules that he would be happy to draw up and or be participate in drawing up. And I wanted to know if your two knowledgeable guests think that this is a possibility, that this could work.
Josh, what about the mayor's guidelines?
Well, the mayor is forgetting his own administration's report from 2009, in which he commissioned a report to see if fracking would be safe in the New York City watershed, and they came back saying it was a catastrophic risk to the watershed.
That word, that was catastrophic.
That is a direct quote from the report. What we're seeing right now, and you talked a lot about the influence of money and on media and culture and politics, the gas industry realizes that there's no putting the genie back in the bottle in terms of flammable water and all the things that people are rising up to be upset about. And so they're going out there with this myth of safe fracking. Oh, it'll be safe if we do these things. Well, there is no technical way that the industry knows how to solve the well casing issue problem. They've been at it for decades. They've studied the problem. They can't get failure rates of well casings, which is the crucial part of the gas well that protects groundwater in any acceptable range. So there is no safe fracking. But it's almost a joke, because when you're talking about fracking, you're not just talking about all of these things that Bill and I are obsessed with in terms of greenhouse gases and water contamination. You're talking about a wholesale industrialization process. It would level any kind of city planning, urban planning, rural planning. You're talking about the invasion of a huge industry. 1,000 truck trips per gas well. 1,000 truck trips per well, when you're talking about hundreds of thousands of, well, 50,000 wells is what they're saying on the low end in New York State. This would make roads a complete and utter nightmare. There are so many aspects of the process, and I'd encourage people to watch Gasland to take a look at. It's basically a primer on how the industry operates throughout the United States. Mm. The safe, I'm trying to think of an adequate metaphor to describe this, but this is their, I think, plan B, which is to say, oh, it's all safe. And I'm really quite surprised at Mayor Bloomberg coming out and saying that he thinks it can be done safely. It's really a fictional position, because none of the things that he is outlining in that report actually exist. They're all some sort of future.
Especially since, you know, New York City has for 150 years patrolled and protected its watershed with a vengeance. I mean, ask the people in Kingston or what used to be a Shokan or, you know, all those kind of places. You can't go take a boat out on much of the New York City reservoir system, and that water is the cleanest drinking water in the world and the tastiest. It's pretty shocking to see Mayor Bloomberg, who's obsessed with whether or not you can have a 32-ounce soda, you know, just say, oh, well, whatever, let's go frack.
Yeah, I don't – yeah, how does that work?
Well, I think this – to be honest, I think this speaks much more to – the interests of big business and money that he's and his environmental record, which has been pretty good. I mean, this is a guy who gave $50 million to the Sierra Club to fight coal, and is now making a contribution, which essentially plays out as a donation to the gas industry, to try to put forward the idea that, oh, you know, the people who are concerned about this are really extremists. That's not what I'm finding. What I'm finding here is this is a movement born out of people who are afraid of losing their towns, who are afraid of losing the basic control of their daily lives and of their water and their air and their health. And I think what's amazing about what's happening right now is people are connecting the dots and understanding that it's not just about their backyard, their state, their town. When you look at what Bill is saying, and this information is really grasped, I think, very rapidly by the movement, the fracking movement, that this is about global climate change on a whole nother level. So we're all, in a sense, in the backyard. So I'm very grateful to Bill for bringing that message here, and I think that this is a terrific connect-the-dots moment.
Of course, when you talk about politics, too, it's also worth noting that this is an interesting political story for Andy Cuomo, too. You know, there's a lot of people, I think, and he may be among them, thinking about 2016 and a presidential run. This will be the way that the country's environmentally minded voters figure out what they think of him. This will be obviously the big test for him. And he, among other things, needs to bear in mind that 4 years from now, there may well have been a lot of nasty fracking accidents around New York, and B, we're going to be much deeper into the all-out concern about climate change. He's positioning himself with big donors and big business, but boy, is he threatening to turn his back on people.
But you look at, we mentioned the poll numbers for people who are concerned about fracking in upstate New York. But then you look at his poll numbers, and they're through the roof.
Well, yeah, it's not a central issue at the moment for him. But, you know, he's going to enter a field of primary candidates in 2016 if he's serious about running. And this is one of the ways he'll be judged.
But let's not forget that Andrew Cuomo has still not come out with a position on this.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. Yeah.
And
I mean, do we know?
I think Andrew Cuomo is a very smart guy. I mean, he likes taking things apart. He's technically minded. He's going to I think he understands that this is a huge, huge problem. And I can understand any politician having pause in the face of this industry and their power. But essentially, it is a true test of leadership and a vision, because if New York decides to open up to the frackers, it is essentially abdication of the government. It's abdication of leadership, and it's abdication of responsibility. There is nothing in that DEC document that says we're able to handle this.
And does it not also open doors to other states as well? I mean, if New York does it, then that's a huge...
But conversely, New York could reject this proposal. And the amazing thing that's happened is that people have started to understand that we need to adopt and develop renewable energy, and that this could be an incredible driver of New York's economy. When you're talking about jobs, solar jobs, I think it's far outstrips what you would get from the gas industry. And these jobs also happen to be not toxic. The gas industry jobs are incredibly dangerous. So we're talking about a problem which is so clear-cut, we could go backwards into these fossil fuels of, you know, the 18th century technology, or we can actually innovate. And New York State and Andrew Cuomo has the chance here to lead the world and develop an economy based on renewable energy that is so needed in those counties and throughout all of upstate New York.
And look at he's got the two examples to choose from on either side. Pennsylvania's gone whole hog into fracking, and it's been a disaster. Mm-hmm. And Vermont, on the other side, became the first state in the union this past spring to ban fracking altogether. Vermont has 5% unemployment rate. It's doing all right economically. There are other ways forward than selling off your state.
Josh, I just want to, before we go back to the calls, whenever we talk, we've had many discussions about this issue. We've had people from the lobby to say it's important that we frack in this state. We've had many groups that are against it. But anyone who is sort of pro fracking will point to your film and that, and you've mentioned it several times during the course of our interview of the flammable water.
Mm-hmm.
and the questioning of that image, because it is such a powerful mm-hmm. image. And the first thing that people will say within a sentence of how did you arrive at your conclusion that this is the best thing for the state, they will come to that, well, look, this is just a lot of it is coming at us where, you know, the sky is falling, and that's not the case. So how do you
there's actually been a very long and extensive campaign to try to knock down the film by the gas industry. I address a lot of it in a short that I put out, and it's online. It's called The Sky is Pink. It's easy to find. The gas industry will come in and say, well, the flammable water is naturally occurring. It's almost laughable. But the point is not to make an argument that makes any sense. It's to go out there and get on the media and say the sky is pink, and then have the anchor person go, well, the facts are being debated. We're not sure really what color the sky is. And so it's a fun little piece. It's out there online. It's easy to find. PinkSkyNY.com. That's the website. But so address a lot of that there. But I think what you're asking me is to talk about how the industry has been very successful in trying to counteract the things that people know on the ground. It's taken a pound of flesh.
It's such a powerful image.
Well, we have bigger and better explosions in the new film. And like any sequel, it's a sequel, so we had to have bigger and better explosions.
But that's not good, right?
You can
we
look
don't want
forward
that.
To that.
Yeah.
I wish I could say this was getting better, but this is really truly a situation where the world is watching New York. When you have 32 countries, what the State Department put out something called the Global Shale Gas Initiative, charting shale plays in 30 countries and pledging a government-to-government engagement process so the U.S. could teach the rest of the world how to do this. You're looking at this decision in front of New York right now as something which will affect people across not only across the United States, but across Europe and South Africa and across Asia. This is so crucial. And when you're talking about Andrew Cuomo wanting to be potentially world leader, this is one of those moments where leaders are the people who have vision. They're not politicians are the people who negotiate and make compromises, but a leader says, okay, we can see where the future is going. Let's put that out in front of the
and,
world.
And have courage. And this could be his hero moment, which he, you know, he's had one of those already when he stood up for the rights of everybody to get married.
Right.
And that pushed, you know, that helped people understand who he was. Here's the next one of those. Do you have the guts to stand up to this tide of money and do the thing that New York's incredibly rich legacy of environmental conservation history demands, or are you just going to fold over like the guys down in Pennsylvania?
Bill McKibben and Josh Fox are our guests this morning. They're taking part in a rally, Don't Frack New York rally, which takes place at 11 o'clock at the Corning Preserve, Riverside Park. A lot of people on the phone, get to as many as we can in our time remaining. Ira in Ira, Vermont. Go ahead.
Thank you. I want to thank the two activists. I saw Gasland in my environmental justice class last year, and it really opened my eyes. Vermont, we passed a moratorium on natural gas, so I want to thank 350 for that. I'm sure they were part of that. The issue, one of the issues we're dealing with in Vermont, in terms of our state being sold, is that industrial wind companies are literally flattening ridge lines to put up giant wind farms. And those need natural gas backup. And I read the ISO New England Wind Integration Study, and it says that 20% of wind on the New England grid means 310 new megawatts of natural gas spinning reserve or backup, which means more fracking. So I kind of want to gauge the activist position on industrial wind and natural gas production.
How does it fit in?
I think in general they're not tightly linked. And that the experience around the world is that wind is getting much better at dealing with what the engineers call the intermittency problem. So you need a lot less backup. And so they're getting the grid much – I mean, Josh has done a lot of work on whether we can do Power New York on sun and wind. What's the
– Well, there's a remarkable report from Mark Jacobson of Stanford University in California. New Yorkers don't get upset, but it is coming from California, where you can balance wind and sun. As it turns out, when the sun is not shining, the wind is often blowing. Wind blows harder at night. So there's a diagram there that shows that peak power of wind and peak power of solar happen to be opposite.
So, sun and wind are a much better combination than wind and gas.
Oh, without a doubt.
Anyway.
Without a doubt. And, you know, I think that what we have to do is make sure that we're innovating in that way. But with the current technology, with the combination of hydropower, wind, and solar, we could power all of New York, including the fleet of cars.
And it's worth saying, I mean, we've put a lot of discouraging statistics out there today, but it's worth saying that there are some really interesting things going on. 2 days last month, the country of Germany managed to produce more than half the power it used from solar panels within its borders. Now, you know, Munich's north of Montreal. I mean, they're further north than New York State or Vermont. It's not a matter of technology anymore. It's just a matter of political will.
We are going to return to the phone calls. Josh Fox and Bill McKibben are our guests. We are talking about the issue of fracking. There is a Don't Frack New York rally that is taking place at the Corning Preserve at 11 o'clock this morning. We are taking your phone calls, 1-800-348-2551. We will continue our conversation after this short break. Josh Fox and Bill McKibben are guests. This morning we are talking about fracking and gauging your opinion as well. We welcome your phone calls, 1-800-348-2551. We have about 10 minutes left and try to get to as many phone calls as we can. We go to Edward in North Adams. Edward, go ahead.
Good morning. I have a question and a comment. The question is it true that my memory is correct in hearing that Sweden has committed itself to be fossil fuel free by, I think, 2030. Do you know anything about that?
I think that's right. That, as usual, were we all Scandinavians, the world would work a lot better. And,
Scandinavians
are doing some interesting things.
Well, if
Vermont has
true.
Actually committed itself to being fossil fuel free by 2032, which is
if good. That's true, couldn't we learn some lessons from what they're trying to do about it?
Absolutely.
And something like the Germany thing you just talked about?
Absolutely. And the thing that gets in the way, here's what gets in the way. There, you know, the fossil fuel industry, alone among industries, at the moment has the privilege of dumping its waste out for free. There is no price on carbon or methane, and hence they're allowed to pour it into the atmosphere for free, and it gives them an incredible advantage over the fuels that we know we want to be using, sun and wind and things. And you know, that's a big political fight. It's the fight that we're engaged in at 350.org all the time. And, you know, this fracking battle is a part of it.
Edward, thank you very much for the telephone call. We go to Paul now in Pittsfield. Paul, go ahead.
Hi, how are you? I would like to revisit something that was already mentioned by your speakers, but I don't think it gets enough attention, and I hope it gets more attention in the future. And that's the fact that millions and millions and millions of gallons of water and fluids have to be trucked mm-hmm. to the sites that are going to be working these fracking pumps. Mm-hmm. And not to mention the equipment and the materials themselves, the pump casing. And, you know, there's so much weight going over the highways mm-hmm. that the roads are getting pulverized. The old archaic aging bridges are getting more and more stressed. And at the end of the day, all the taxpayers, state and federal taxpayers who have to foot the bill for, you know, the roads and the bridges are going to be left with a much larger bill after the companies that are trucking all these people, materials, and equipment over these roads and literally destroying them are going to just walk away. And I'm just wondering if that particular set of circumstances can get
well,
more.
You spoke about this.
I spoke about it earlier in the program. 1,000 truck trips per gas well. 1,000 truck trips per gas well. And you never drill one well. You're yeah. drilling them in the hundreds. When you go to the fracking zone, Route 6, Pennsylvania, is one of the best roads. It goes all across the top of Pennsylvania, and it's a little road. I used to love to take it. I've gone a mile and a half stretch in parts of that road, which have taken me an hour and a half. Because you're sitting there behind water truck after water truck after water truck. And don't forget, this water is getting injected down there. Most of it's not coming back up out of the formation. It's toxic. It's infused with the fracking fluids, infused with the fracking chemicals. The formation itself, in many places, is radioactive. So you now have radon as an issue with the Marcellus gas. But in terms of trucking, it's not just a question of traffic or roads. It's also question of safety. There's something called oil field exempt. I spent last weekend in West Virginia interviewing some of the workers on the rigs, and they're talking about how there's no normal truckers can only work, I think, maximum of 10 hours a day. If you're working in the oil field, you can work up to 24 hours. So you've got truck drivers on the road who are sleep deprived, who are driving thousands of gallons of toxic material on the roads. And traffic accidents and traffic fatalities are going up like crazy in fracking areas. And it's not surprising. If you go out there and you're in a small car or even in an SUV, these guys are rolling pretty hard. And it's taking its toll on, you know, the culture of the area, the exhaust, the roads are, you can just go and see where the roads are getting decimated. So the gas industry will leave a bill in health and in water and in roads and infrastructure and cultural damage that will far outlast and outweigh any kind of money that's coming into the state from doing this practice.
Thanks very much for the telephone call. In the time that we have left, Bill, which isn't much, but I'm interested in when you look at the specific goal for today. You are wearing a pin that says "I pledge to resist fracking." That is the point today.
Thousands of people by now, over 3,000, have signed a pledge that they will physically resist fracking when it comes to New York. That's not a, you know, this time last year I was in jail in D.C. for the first time in my life as we fought this Keystone Pipeline and the tar sands in Canada. And it's not fun, but people are realizing that these are what the stakes are in what is, you know, the most epic fight humans have ever gotten to get involved in, the fight literally to try and keep a planet that works. And this summer is proof of how close to the edge we are on that fight. So, yeah, people are ready to do what it takes.
And the pledge of resistance, I think you can get it at the website, which is don'tfrackny.org. Don't frack without an apostrophe, ny.org. And I would urge people to sign that pledge of resistance. That's what this is coming down to. When your democracy is at risk, you have to defend it. This goes so far beyond defending the water and air in New York State. It goes to the root of our democracy. When you have an issue that you have powerful corporate interests, multinational companies interfering with the normal democratic process of your state, you have to stand up for that. And what the Pledge of Resistance is about is saying, you know, we're going to take those democratic values very, very personally. Our bodies, our wills, our spirits, our hearts, resisting this. So I would urge people to go there, Don't Frack NY, and sign
the pledge. And for those part of the Northeast Public Radio audience that's within an hour's drive of Albany, you've still got time to get down to the Corning Preserve on the riverfront this morning to join in this rally and the march up to the Capitol.
Again, the Don't Frack New York rally with Bill McKibben, Josh Fox, Deborah Winger, and others takes place at the Corning Preserve Riverside Park in Albany this morning at 11 a.m. As Josh mentioned, you can find out more information about their work at don'tfrackny.org, don'tfrackny.org. Josh Fox, Bill McKibben, I know you're very busy this morning. I thank you so much for taking the time out to talk to us and to share your expertise.
Such a pleasure, as always, Joe. Thanks for your good work, man.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.